Chapter 10. My heart sank as I watched Adhara try to send her message over the radio, and the hope we had a few seconds ago had disappeared with the mention of our satellites. Her lilac skin seemed paler than usual, and she scrunched her face in frustration at the broken technology.
"I didn't know you would rely on our satellites for the radio," I said.
"Our signals have been going down for weeks. I thought you would have your own system in place for communication."
"We do back home,"
Adhara said with a frustrated groan, and her gills fluttered as she spoke.
"But we have never needed to use radio on this planet. Our scientists said Alakarak satellites would work when we were here."
"You didn't know our signals were down?" I asked. "Wouldn't that have been expected?"
"I didn't realize it would fail so fast,"
Adhara said.
"We knew they would stop working eventually, but this is so soon."
"Good old human technology,"
Kat sighed.
"All it takes is a few dinosaurs and it all goes to shit."
Adhara folded her arms and glared out of the window as if she was trying to spot the offending satellite that caused her radio to fail. Her silver freckles sparkled, and even with a sour expression, she looked pretty.
"Oh, crap,"
Becca groaned.
"So you can't talk to your people at all? There's no way of stopping the attack? Oh, we're just going to be doomed to be bombed by aliens."
"If the dinos don't start using weapons too and wipe us out first,"
Kat muttered.
"There must be something we can do,"
Haywan said.
"Is there any way to send a signal from this ship without satellites? Some kind of emergency backup?"
"No,"
Adhara said, and she suddenly looked like she might cry. Her green eyes flicked desperately around the room, and for the first time she seemed unsure and lost in her own ship. The beautiful alien slumped down into the pilot chair, and she stared blankly out of the window. Her long legs shook as she drummed the floor with her feet, and her pretty face scrunched up with a scowl. I wanted to put a hand on her shoulder, or bring her into my arms for comfort. But I just ran a hand through my hair and tried to figure out our next step. "Okay," I said. "There must be something that can help boost the signal. If Haywan's dad made that call, we can figure this out. We just need to decide how the hell he made that call in the first place, and then we could try it out."
"We've been trying to work that out for ages,"
Becca moaned.
"He must have a magical bloody phone. If Haywan couldn't figure out how he made the call, we're not going to figure it out now."
"Made a call?"
Adhara asked as she looked up with the same scowl in place.
"What does it mean, made a call?"
"On his phone," I said. "You know, like a radio. Haywan's dad called her from another country, and this was just a few days ago, way after most of the signals crashed."
"How?"
Adhara asked, and she jumped up from her seat to look me in the eye.
"How did Haywan's dad make call?"
"We don't know," I said. "He only did it once, and we weren't able to get back in touch with him."
"If he can do it, you can too?"
the alien asked, and Becca snorted.
"Not really,"
the blonde Brit said.
"Haywan's dad is some crazy rich mobster. Like I said, it might as well have been magic. I doubt we'll have any of the equipment that he has access to."
"I never said mobster,"
the Korean muttered, and focused on playing with a dial on the control panel.
"Because you never did tell us about him,"
Kat reminded her.
"You were about to after we all fucked, but then a giant alien spacecraft crashed, and we got distracted. Are we ever going to hear about him?"
"Fucked?"
Adhara asked with her head tilted.
"What is fucked?"
The girls burst out laughing, but then I was faced with all their cheeky smiles while they waited for me to answer this one for the curious alien. I said, and scratched the back of my neck. It's a word we have on Earth. It's basically like, to mate, you know."
"Oh,"
the alien said, and her emerald eyes darted down to her feet.
"Yes, I see now." "Jason, did you just say mate?"
Haywan laughed, and I rolled my eyes. "It's a word she knows," I sighed.
"Oh my god, I love it,"
Becca snickered.
"This brings a whole new meaning. Jason, next time, we're not fucking. I want to mate with you instead. Can we try that?"
We technically already do," I said out of the side of my mouth. "I seem to recall you demanding 15 sons from me, and I for damn sure been trying to deliver." I sent the blonde Brit a wink, and she instantly blushed to her roots and clapped her hands to her cheeks. Then she tumbled into Haywan while the two girls ended up in a giggling fit, and I couldn't tell who was blushing more.
but I kinda thought it might be Ed Hara. The beautiful alien was watching the two of them get all silly about baby talk, and her cheeks were the darkest shade of purple I'd seen them yet.
You are going to provide 15 young to one female alone?
Ed Hara asked.
He fucking better,
Becca laughed. The girl started giggling twice as loud, and this time Ed Hara tucked her chin to the side while she smiled like she couldn't help herself. Then I remembered her mentioning that her people weren't producing as many young as they needed to, and I wondered if this was as shocking a number of offspring to her as it was to me, because she kinda seemed impressed. Anyway, I grinned, and Kat snickered toward her boots. Hey Juan, I think you promised us some story time. Maybe if we have a better idea of your family, we can piece together something helpful. The type of equipment they would have access to, and, you know, that sort of thing.
Is this really the time?
Hey Juan hummed.
We have so much work to do. Tell us,
Kat demanded.
Yes, I want to know about your father,
Ed Hara said.
And this call he can make happen. Oh my God, finally!
Becca squealed as she clapped her hands.
I have been dying to hear this since I first met you, you mysterious little ninja.
Who's betting he's actually the secret ruler of the entire world?
Kat asked.
Or even better, he's actually from a different alien race, and he's just been hiding amongst us all this time.
Ed Hara narrowed her eyes thoughtfully.
I am pretty sure he is not an alien.
Heiwan laughed as she placed the blaster down on the floor beside her.
Also, I don't even know everything about my father. He is a very secretive man with his work. Which is...
Becca prompted.
It's hard to say,
Heiwan said, and the Korean beauty bit her lip as she thought.
I know that in Korea, a lot of people call him what I would translate to the Underground King.
Holy shit.
Kat chuckled.
We're just jumping straight to the Underground King.
Damn, I grinned. Does that mean I'm fucking a princess?
You are a princess?
Ed Hara asked in an impressed tone.
No.
Heiwan laughed.
It is just a title that people come up with for him. He is involved with many things going on in Korea. Some of it for good men, and some for bad.
What is his job, though?
Kat pressed.
What kinds of things does he do for people?
He can offer protection?
Heiwan shrugged.
If there is someone who wishes to disappear from the world, he can arrange for you to be dead in the eyes of the law, and provide you ways to start a new life.
Holy shit, I snickered, and my grin stretched from ear to ear. So like an unofficial witness protection program?
Sort of,
the Korean nodded.
But that's only a bit of what he does. I know he has a number of hitmen who work for him. I think I met some when I was younger.
Hitmen? I hissed. Are you serious?
Did they have a bring your daughter to work day?
Becca laughed.
Just little baby Heiwan toddling around the hitmen headquarters? What is a hitman?
Ed Hara asked. You pay them to murder others, I explained. The alien furrowed her brow.
Why not murder others yourself?
I stalled while I tried to decide how to explain the various justice systems of Earth. But Kat seemed too intrigued with the Korean beauty's tale to allow for any lulls in the conversation.
How is he so rich?
The corporal asked with a lopsided grin.
You said he has a base on the island. He has to be rich as hell.
He has protected many important people.
Heiwan shrugged.
It costs a lot of money to make someone vanish. All the travel, certificates, documentation and such. I think he knows a lot of secrets about important politicians and their families. And your brothers?
Becca led.
You said they work for him too? Yes.
Heiwan confirmed.
They are all older than me. When I was born, my father had already made his fortune, and he wanted me to go and have a normal life.
That worked out well.
Kat snorted.
Although, to be fair to him, the whole dinosaur apocalypse was hard to predict.
So, I said as I tried to picture Heiwan's dad in my mind. Your dad is like this underground king who fixes people up with fake identities and can make bad guys disappear?
Well, I think he'd make good people disappear for the right price,
Heiwan admitted.
Damn!
Becca crowed.
That's what I was waiting for. Heiwan, your family's fucking awesome!
It sounded like an action movie backstory, but from what I knew of Heiwan, it fit perfectly with her personality. I had wondered for so long about my lover's upbringing, but finally hearing the details that brought such a badass girl into my life did not disappoint in the slightest. "I only love you more knowing this," I informed the Korean, and she sent me a dimpled smile and a tiny shrug.
"So how was he able to call you, though?"
Becca asked as she twirled a strand of her golden hair.
"Does he own a fucking satellite?"
"Maybe,"
the Korean replied.
"I really am not sure. But he would definitely have a way of communicating with clients that would not be accessible to the police or government."
"Shit, does he have his own ground station?" I asked.
"That would be huge,"
Kat whistled.
"If he does, we could use it to get the ship system up and running. Heiwan, how are you so casual about your dad?"
"It's all I've ever known,"
Heiwan chuckled.
"He's always been my father. I guess I never think about how odd it is until I have to, you know, spell it out for people. Which I absolutely never do."
"No shit," I laughed.
"Hi, I'm Heiwan,"
Becca mimicked.
"I'm a first year here at uni, and my dad can make all your pervy asses disappear from the face of the earth."
"That's pretty much what I said for my first day at Cambridge,"
Heiwan nodded stoically. "Moving back to the issue at hand," I chuckled. "Your dad said he wanted to come here. Do you think he still will?"
"He will never take a risk that he knows he won't survive,"
Heiwan said.
"I know he wants to be with me, but now that he knows I have a group, he's probably happier. He would not risk flying all this way if he knew he would not make it."
There was silence as we processed what Heiwan had just told us. If her dad really did have access to something that could boost radio signals, then that was huge. And my mind raced through the possibilities of accessing our own communication system in the middle of an apocalypse.
"The Underground King,"
Becca said as she grinned at Heiwan.
"What an awesome title. 10 out of 10 cool points to your dad."
"Your father sounds important,"
Edhara said as her emerald eyes studied the pretty Korean.
"He sounds a bit like my own."
"Really?"
Heiwan asked.
"How? What was your dad like?"
The alien looked slightly hesitant to talk at first, and her eyes flickered between us all. Then she grabbed a bit of her silver hair to pull on, and I smiled encouragingly. If Edhara really would share personal information with us about her family, then I wanted to hear all about where she came from and her people. I could only imagine how different her upbringing must have been compared to our own, and as Edhara looked at me, the sides of her mouth twitched a little.
"My family is very important,"
the alien said.
"They are one of the ruler families from my planet, which are the families who decide on the rulings and laws."
"Seriously?"
Becca blurted out.
"Does every girl in this room have a cooler family than me?"
"No one is cooler than Debbie,"
Kat assured her. "So they're in government?" I asked the alien. "Does that mean your family were among the ones who chose to invade Earth?" Edhara instantly looked down at her feet. "It's okay," I said gently. "I was only wondering. I know your people thought we wanted war. You didn't know."
"I told them that we should not fight,"
the alien said quietly.
"But they were insistent that it had to be done, and I would not disrespect my father and my people. So I agreed to be a scout for the cause."
"Well, they did think we were that Mars colony," I pointed out. "They thought we were after another war."
"Yes,"
Edhara nodded.
"We all thought this. And now we have no way of contacting him,"
Becca groaned.
"Your people don't have some kind of telepathy between families? No mind-reading powers to send a quick memo?"
"Sadly, there is not,"
Edhara sighed.
"If we do not have satellite signal, there can be no radio message."
We stood in silence for a while, and I glanced at the hazy waves of the force field outside. The flickers of pale pink and blue were soothing to watch, and part of me wished we could just stay in the ship until everything blew over. "Heiwan's dad won't come here," I said. "Because as we've seen, the flying dinos attack helicopters, and her dad's clearly smarter than whoever was in that one."
"I'm impressed they made it this far, to be honest,"
Kat snorted.
"I'm guessing they came from London."
"But Edhara's ship wouldn't have any trouble with the dinos," I said slowly. "You said this ship is faster than the Omati."
"It cannot be harmed by any flying Omati,"
Edhara confirmed. "And if we could get this ship to Heiwan's dad," I continued, "then maybe he could help with the signal."
"Jason,"
Heiwan gasped and whipped around to face me.
"Are you saying we should fly to Korea in a spaceship?"
I mean, what else are we going to do? I grinned as the idea started to form in my head. Think about it. If this thing can travel to different planets, it won't have a hard time getting to another country.
You want to fly in my ship?
Edhara asked.
Is that possible for humans?
Kat asked.
We could be passengers?
Of course,
the alien replied.
It would be no problem. You can use extra seat.
The alien reached a lilac finger over to the control panel and hit a blue button. There was a slow whirring noise, and four silver chairs started to rise from the floor of the ship.
No way!
Becca laughed as the seats reached their full height and formed a semicircle which faced out the front window. We each jumped onto one of the seats, and just like the pilot chair, it was shockingly comfortable for what looked like plain metal. There was a dial on each side of the seats, and when I twisted one at a time, I found one was to recline, and the other started to immediately warm up the chair under my butt. This is fucking fantastic, I said, as I sat back in the chair. Heated seats, a great view. Let's just go travel the world.
We should,
Becca gasped as she played with the recliner.
After we save the world and everything. This is smart.
Edhara chuckled lightly.
So, Haywan's dad is basically a mobster,
Kat said.
And Adhara's dad is an important alien politician. My dad's a retired baker. I'm feeling slightly intimidated.
Hey, my mom's just a mental hairdresser that drinks too much wine,
Becca snorted.
Debbie is the most intimidating of all,
Haywan said.
I bet she would win in a fight against my dad.
The girls erupted with laughter, and Adhara smiled as she watched them. I still have so many questions about your family, I said, as I shifted in my chair to look at Haywan. The Korean beauty had her legs up on the recliner, and her ebony hair fell over the back of the seat.
What do you want to know?
She asked with a coy smile.
I don't know everything. There is a lot my dad keeps from me, to keep me safe.
Has he ever killed someone himself?
Becca asked as she toyed with a blonde strand of hair.
Yes,
Haywan said without missing a beat.
I saw him a few times with blood splattered on his expensive suits, but he always brought me a cake when he came home, so I didn't ask questions.
Oh my god, I snickered.
How many brothers do you have?
Kat asked.
Three,
Haywan replied.
Like I said, they're all older than me. I think I was a surprise. Is your mom part of it too?
Becca asked.
She mostly keeps out of it. My father and brothers really raised me, and they are good men. Even though they do dangerous work.
High five for awesome parents,
Becca said, and the Korean met her palm midair.
What will your dad think of you bringing a guy home?
Kat grinned.
Will he give Jason a stern talking to? Wave a gun in his face? Do the whole protective dad speech?
He will like Jason very much,
Haywan laughed.
When I told him about you all on the phone, he said it sounds like I am with good people. Jason is honest and brave. That is all my father cares about.
Yeah, but this honest and brave guy is kind of a handsome young yank who's been dicking his daughter.
Becca hummed. Hey, I scoffed, and I playfully thwacked her arm. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
It's true,
Becca laughed.
Hey, Won, really think this through. Your dad walks out of his billionaire private island mansion. He's got three strapping mobster sons with him, and he looks across his private beach to see his pretty little daughter on the arm of a guy with Jason's sexy-ass grin. Does he trot up to Jason with a big smile and shake his hand?
Haywan's smile faltered a little, and then she bit her lip as she sent me a nervous glance. Really? I asked.
I don't know. I've never introduced him to a boy before,
the Korean beauty admitted.
Most boys in Korea were too scared to date me.
Oh, shit, I chuckled.
He might take just a little time to warm up,
she continued.
My brothers, especially, might be a tiny bit standoffish.
All three of them,
Kat mused.
That's a lot of glares, Jason.
Shit. I chuckled again and shook my head. Well, I still can't wait to meet your dad. He sounds amazing, and he clearly did an awesome job of raising a badass daughter, so fuck it.
That's the spirit,
Becca laughed as she patted my leg.
But if Haywan's dad wants to give you a real hard time, we'll shut him up in a room with my mum. That should do it.
Debbie loves you,
Haywan laughs.
She would sing your praises for days.
Debbie's a peach, I agreed.
What about you, Adhara?
Haywan asked.
Will your parents be worried about you? They might be,
Edhara nodded.
They know I am capable, but they are afraid of the Alacaric, and I worry they might think I am being held prisoner if they do not hear from me.
Well, that'll probably speed up their plan, I said as I twisted the recliner so I was upright. If they think their daughter's been kidnapped, they won't waste time sending their ships down to finish off the attack.
Right. So how long until you can get this thing to fly?
Becca asked.
I'm not sure,
Edhara replied, and she got up and strolled into the weapon room. I looked over my shoulder and watched as she opened a small compartment in the wall and then pulled out a black bag and brought it back to the control room. She untied the string that held the pouch shut and laid it down on the floor, and the bag contained a number of silver instruments, some of which looked like stuff you would get in a normal toolbox. There were slim screwdrivers and hammers, but also longer items with pronged heads I had never seen before.
Toolbox?
Kat asked, and the alien nodded.
Every craft has it inside,
Edhara said.
For the basic fixings.
Is there a chance it won't be able to fly again? I asked, as the alien searched through the silver tools.
There is a chance,
Edhara nodded.
It depends how much damage was done to the engine during the crash. Our protection systems are very good, but I do not know if the ground here will have caused new problems to it. It is not used to this soil.
Can we help?
Kat asked.
Is there anything we can do?
Edhara looked around as she drummed her fingers on one of the pronged tools, and then she nodded.
You could start to dig the front side out of the dirt,
the alien said.
The craft is sturdy and strong, but I do not know if it will be able to get into the sky when weighed down with all this dirt.
We can do that, I agreed. If you promise not to fly away the moment the engine comes on.
I will not,
the alien smiled.
Can we use the evaporator on the mud?
Becca asked.
And just dig it out that way? It will be done in seconds. We cannot risk it to touch ship,
Edhara said as she shook her head.
There are tools in weapon room for digging. Worth a shot,
Becca shrugged.
Mind you, I don't think I can cope with that smell again for a while. My nose feels assaulted.
I had to force myself to stand up from the warm seat, and I stretched my arms up before I turned to go to the weapon room. The cabinet which Edhara had opened was still ajar, and I pulled it open further to reveal a bundle of short gray shovels with huge pointed scoops. They looked like they were compacted for storage, and I reached in to take one. It slid out into a longer contraption with ease, and like the weapons, it was incredibly light. I grabbed three more of the shovels and turned to the girls who were still in their chairs. Let's get going, I said. The faster we get this thing flying, the faster we can save the world.
Oh, but the seats are so comfy,
Kat groaned.
I think this might be comfier than our bed.
Come on, soldier. Let's see if we can get this fixed up before it gets dark, I grinned. The girls reluctantly got up from their seats, and I handed them each one of the shovels. Edhara hit a pink button on the control panel, and the seats started to lower back down with the mechanical whirr and disappeared into the floor.
This is so awesome,
Haywan sighed as she inspected the sleek metal flooring, and it was impossible to tell there was anything down there. There weren't even seams left behind. The force field will need to be off, right? I asked.
Yes,
Edhara agreed, and she hit the button that made the hazy shield vanish outside.
I guess we just have to keep an eye out for dinos,
Becca said.
Or any of the other things that want to kill us all of a sudden.
Edhara had taken one of the pronged tools and started to open up the front panel of the controls, and she pulled aside the cover and revealed an intricate maze of boxes, buttons, and more wires. Wow, I whistled. That looks complicated. We'll leave you to it.
Can we take the weapons?
Kat asked as she looked down at the alien items we had left by the door.
Yes,
Edhara nodded.
You must be protected, and I do not trust your human weapons.
The alien shuffled herself forward on the floor and began to examine the workings of the ship, and I grabbed the blaster and carried it out into the fresh air with my alien shovel. The breeze was enough to shake off my sleepiness, and I stretched my neck from side to side to prepare for the manual labor. A quick scan of the hillside showed me that we appeared to be alone, but I knew that we had to be more careful than ever. Underestimating the dinos would be the most dangerous thing we could do. And we would have to be on high alert with every scoop of dirt.
I can't get that herd out of my head.
Becca shivered as we made our way around to the front of the ship.
The way they snuck around the side of the hill. That was so creepy.
They were so organized,
Kat agreed.
I can't believe the herbivores and carnivores teamed up. It really shows that they just want us dead, even if they don't want to actually eat us.
Can you believe there are people who can talk to dinos?
Haywan asked, as we stopped at the back of the craft.
I know they're not technically people, but it's still so crazy.
Her species sounds so advanced, I muttered, and I looked down at the dirt. The ship was wedged into the hillside pretty far, but I reckoned it wouldn't take long for the four of us to dig it out. I placed the blaster down to the side and hit the shovel into the ground, and the head carved easily through the thick mud. Then I hauled up a load of dirt, and it was twice as light as I expected it to be when I pulled it out again.
Is everything Adhara's people make just better than ours, then?
Becca chuckled as she started to work.
Seriously, how many years behind them do you think our technology is?
I want to know where the Mars colony disappeared to,
Kat said.
These Alakarik, who apparently look like humans aside from stomach gills?
Haywan added.
And the root language is literally English?
Becca furrowed her brow as she dug.
How has everything we've known about our own solar system been proven wrong in the space of a few hours?
Not everything, I assured her. Just enough to be concerning. The girls chuckled in agreement, and we dug in silence for a while. I assumed all of us were trying to process how crazy the last couple days had been. But discovering Haywan's underground king of a father weighed a little heavily on my mind. Only because I apparently was going to meet him soon, with my three girlfriends in tow, a beautiful lilac-skinned alien, and a fucking spaceship. The sky started to turn orange as we continued to dig the spacecraft out of the dirt. Ravenhall glowed with the sunset behind it, and the clouds became wispy and sparse. We kept a sharp eye on the hillside and took regular breaks to examine the road below for movement. And the more we unearthed the ship, the more glistening silver symbols I noticed carved right around the side. In a few hours, we managed to do a decent job of clearing away all the dirt surrounding the front end, and we all stepped back to catch our breaths.
Bloody hell,
Becca said as she wiped sweat from her forehead.
Alien shovels, and it's still a pain in the arse. My arms have had their year's worth of a workout.
The croft looks so much bigger,
Kat observed as she walked around the side of the ship to see the whole thing.
I wonder how fast it can fly.
As a scout ship, I'd expect it to be pretty fast, I said, as sweat dripped down my neck. It did come from a planet that has never been charted or noticed by our best scientists in the world.
That we know of,
Haywan added.
I think this makes us qualified to work for NASA,
Becca said.
Do you think they're hiring?
They will be when the whole alien thing gets out, I laughed. But the thought made me glance up to the sky. It wouldn't be long before another government chopper was sent out to find the crashed spaceship and the agents who had been inside.
I think that's as good as it's going to get,
Kat said.
It's getting dark, so we can't stay out here much longer.
It's a miracle we haven't been hunted yet,
Haywan muttered.
Is that creeping anyone else out?
Yeah, it's getting unnerving how very few dinos have tried to kill us all this evening,
Becca chuckled. Let's go see how Adhara's doing, I said, and grabbed the blaster from the ground nearby before we made our way back into the craft. I was almost disappointed that I hadn't had to use it on any dinos, but as nice as it had been to get a few hours of peace while we worked, the girls had a point. The lack of dinos was more unnerving than it would have been even a couple of weeks ago. We'd seen multiple stragglers before the organized herd moved in, and Ravenhall alone had wiped out over a dozen scaly bastards today. There was no chance we'd suddenly cleared out this neck of the countryside, but I tried to just embrace a calm evening when it came my way. Adhara was cross-legged on the floor as we came into the control room. She had a small smile on her face, and her lilac skin was stained with what looked like spots of green oil. The maze of wires in the control box somehow looked even more complex than before, and she carefully redirected a blue wire into a new socket with her tongue stuck out in concentration.
I think it is nearly ready,
Adhara said, and her smile stretched out and lit up her emerald eyes.
I only need to do another two things, and the engine should be working. Did mud get taken away?
Yeah, I nodded as I wiped sweat from my forehead. I think it should be good to go. This is so fucking cool. The alien glanced up at me.
Fucking the cool? What is a different meaning of fuck?
Becca explained.
It's an incredibly versatile word, so you can really use it just about anywhere.
Okay,
Adhara said as she reached into the open control panel.
When I turn this dial, we should have good power.
The alien twisted something inside the box, and the ship sprang to life. There was suddenly a gentle whirring underneath the beeps of various buttons on the control panel, and the ceiling had rows of lights which sprang into action above us. Some were purple and some were orange, and right in the middle of the ceiling was a large square light which was red. A robotic voice said something in a series of guttural growls and hums, and the floor vibrated slightly.
"Holy shit!"
Becca squealed.
"We're inside a working UFO! This is amazing!"
"So many lights,"
Haywan said as she stared open-mouthed at the ceiling.
"What do they all mean?"
I looked over at Adhara and saw that she was scowling at the red light above us. "I'm guessing that light isn't meant to be that color?" I asked, and the alien shook her head.
"It should be the color of your sky,"
she replied.
"This color means that the brain wire is loose."
"The brain wire," I said, and nodded like this computed to me. "Right. Well, can you secure it?"
"Yes,"
Adhara decided.
"Can you give to me some graphite powder?"
I stared at her blankly as she held out her hand expectantly.
Sure, I said. "Where do you keep it?"
"Well, you have it too,"
the alien assured me.
"All beings do. What the hell is graphite powder?"
Becca asked as she folded her arms.
"And how do you know we have it? The words could mean something else to you." "No, our words are similar,"
Adhara said, and then she made a groaning hum which absolutely did not sound like our words.
"Yeah, all right,"
Becca said with a raised eyebrow.
"So, what is it?"
"Some DIY thing,"
Kat said as she wrinkled her forehead.
"I think it's like a bonder of some kind. Why do you need that?"
"Don't you have some advanced alien version of that?" I suggested.
"No, I need graphite powder,"
Adhara said, as she threw her long arms up.
"Can I please have it? Why will you not share?"
Because I don't have any," I said with a glance at the girls. "It's not really something we carry around in our pockets." Adhara looked shocked as she stared up at us from the floor with her tools clutched tightly in her hands and dewy beads of sweat on her forehead. Even her sweat seemed to have a sparkle to it, and her pretty face looked desperate as she widened her eyes. Then the beautiful alien made an angry humming noise, and a guttural sound resonated in her throat as she scowled deeper than ever. She threw the tools down on the ground with a metallic clatter, and she folded her arms in a huff that instantly made me smile. The lilac woman was so fucking cute when she was frustrated. I did my best to make sure she didn't catch me grinning, though, because she had way more advanced weapons than us, and her humming sound was actually pretty unnerving depending on her expression.
"Was that how you say shit?"
Becca asked.
"I know some excellent swear words if you want some. Blow off some steam."
"Steam is not needed,"
Adhara said through gritted teeth.
"I need the graphite powder."
"Wait, that's all we need to make this fly?" I asked. "Graphite powder? Maybe there's some inside. We can ask Gerald."
"I think Gerald knows every item inside that castle,"
Becca nodded.
"If it's in there, he'll know about it. He's a pompous git, but he is handy."
I looked around at the endless array of lights which flickered around us, and I desperately wanted to get this ship flying. We were so close. And seeing Adhara so excited only a few moments ago made me twice as determined to get her craft back in the air. "Let's go inside then," I said. "See if we can find this stuff."
"We probably shouldn't spend much more time outside,"
Kat warned, as we looked out at the quickly darkening sky.
"I only have one set of night vision goggles, and if a herd surprises us in the dark, we're fucked."
"Keep an eye out," I nodded. "Maybe we should keep the alien weapons locked up here for now. I'm not sure taking them into the castle is going to help the trust issues people are having."
"Aww,"
Haywan moaned as she looked down at the blaster.
"Okay, but I want another go soon."
We placed our new weaponry in the glowing pink armory before Adhara stood up to come and close it up, and I swung my rifle around to my front for the short walk back to the castle. The alien still had a scowl on as she tidied up her tools, and she kept making quiet growls to herself as she glared over at the control panel. "Come on," I said gently. "You did awesome work today, and we'll get graphite powder, don't worry."
"We must,"
she said as she looked up at me anxiously. "We will," I promised.
"Okay, Jason,"
Adhara replied, and she relaxed just a tiny bit as she stood up and followed me to the sleek metal corridor. When I stepped outside, it had gotten considerably colder, and the evening sky had deepened to a navy blue as the wispy clouds drifted by. Stars had begun to creep out over the castle, and I shivered as a gust of wind howled. There were no suspicious shadows or signs of movement as we hurried up the hillside, and the countryside seemed peaceful. The waves hitting the cliff nearby were the only sound other than our footsteps as we reached the gravel-covered courtyard, and we hurried over to the staff entrance. Then I pushed the door, but it didn't budge.
"There's a guy there, remember?"
Kat whispered. "Oh, yeah." I nodded and knocked on the wood quickly. "Owen, right? Hey, we're ready to come back in." The door immediately swung open, and the young man with the ponytail smiled at us as we piled inside. He slammed the entrance shut the moment we all made it in, and then he quickly locked it after us. He did a double take when he saw Adhara standing only a few feet behind him, but he gave her a nervous smile before he hurriedly turned back to me.
"You guys were out for ages," he said. "Debbie came through a few times to check if you'd been back yet."
"Of course,"
Becca sighed with a smile.
"Well, we're here now. Have you seen Gerald about?"
"He was in here to get rice earlier," Owen said, as he sat back down on his chair and grabbed his book. "He's probably cooking or serving up the food. Saying that, he better remember to bring some to me. My shift doesn't end for another hour."
"I'll make sure of it," I grinned. "Thanks, man. I'll see you around." Owen gave us a wave and went back to his book as we made our way out of the pantry. There was a smell of spicy food in the air as we headed for the dining hall, and Adhara hesitated as we got closer.
"Maybe I wait here,"
she said as she twitched her fingers.
"I do not want a problem. Just the graphite powder."
"You shouldn't be afraid to be here," I said, as the alien nervously peered over her shoulder. "You should come with us."
"Yeah,"
Becca nodded.
"You saved Joey. You're a hero. These are small-town people, so they might take a while to get used to new shit, but they'll come around."
"She's right," I nodded. "They know you're not on the Dino, Omadi side now."
The Omadi do not bother me,"
Adhara countered.
"Not on my home world, at least. They are pests at times, but they are not so bad when they are not trained as weapons."
"Yeah, don't say that around the locals,"
Kat suggested. We all spoke in a small cluster. A young woman with a blonde ponytail came out of the dining hall and made her way over to the staircase. As she spotted Adhara, she gave a nervous wave like Owen had, and then she hurried up the steps two at a time.
"See?"
Kat said.
"She was being nice. Still slightly terrified, but nice."
"It doesn't sound like there are many people in there anyway,"
Haywan said.
"Some of them will have gone to bed by now."
Adhara nodded, and we started to walk toward the dining hall as quiet voices drifted out of the room. There were three tables set up with white tablecloths, and people sat with cups of tea and glasses of wine as they chatted. Candles were set up on the tables, and it looked incredibly cozy in the castle dining hall tonight. There was an increase of whispers as we stepped inside, but nobody shouted at Adhara or made any audible insults. Debbie was at a table with Gerald and Harris, and they had a bottle of white wine that we had taken from the local shop on our previous run to the Ravenscar town center. Becca's mom gave us a wave as she sipped her drink, but the two men looked shocked to see Adhara with us.
"Hi, honeys,"
Debbie said as we headed over to their table.
"How's it going with the spaceship? I peeked out the window a few times, but I could hardly see you all out there unless you were throwing dirt about."
"It's going really, really well, actually," I said, as Harris avoided eye contact. "We've got it dug out pretty well."
"But we actually need one more thing to get the ship to fly,"
Kat said.
"If you fly,"
Debbie gasped, and she almost inhaled her next sip of wine.
"Fucking hell! Can we all get a go? Can you slam it into the heads of the big T-Rex bastards?"
Becca rubbed her forehead and sighed as her mom giggled.
"You can have a fly,"
Adhara shrugged.
"Do not touch my controls, but this is fine."
"I like you,"
Debbie grinned, and Adhara offered her a tiny smile in return.
"Why does it need to fly?" Harris asked. "Is she... are you going away?"
The doctor shot Adhara a brief glance when he spoke before he looked down at the table.
"We just want to help fix it,"
Becca said hurriedly before Adhara could reply.
"It's Adhara's pride and joy."
The blonde flashed a glance at me, and I guessed she didn't want to have the whole flying to Korea conversation when her mom was half a bottle of wine in. "So," I nodded, "turns out the final thing we need is graphite powder. Do you have any, Gerald?"
"Why on earth would I have graphite powder?"
The dark-haired man wrinkled his brow.
"I apologize, but no, I don't."
"Maybe somewhere in one of the storage cupboards?"
Haywan asked hopefully.
"We don't have it," Gerald said. "I know everything about this building, and we do not have any.
Hey, Mikey called from the next table over. Sorry, didn't mean to eavesdrop, but we have that stuff at the shop.
The shopkeeper had a beer in his hand and three empty cans in front of him. He sat with two of his buddies and didn't seem at all bothered by Adhara's presence this evening. Maybe Debbie's scolding really had done the trick.
You do? I asked. Are you sure?
Yeah, Mikey nodded. I remember because one day I was super high at work and read every label in the shop out of boredom. There's graphite powder in the little DIY section.
Awesome,
Kat said.
Thanks, Mikey.
The shopkeeper raised his beer can and gave us a tipsy nod. It's too late to do a shop run now, I said to the girls. We'll need to do it first thing in the morning.
Where to run?
Edhara whispered. A shop, I explained. There's a town nearby, and we'll be able to get that graphite powder there.
Right away?
The alien asked anxiously. Absolutely, I assured her. The locals at the third table had stopped their conversations as they watched us, and Adhara started to look uncomfortable again as she glanced at their faces.
Let's hit the hay, then,
Becca said in a light tone.
So we can be up bright and early tomorrow.
Good idea, I nodded. Good night, Debbie.
Night, honey,
the blonde woman replied as she poured herself another glass of wine. Becca walked over to her mom and bent down for a kiss on the cheek. And then we made our way back out of the dining hall, and the quiet rumble of conversation started up again as we left.
They still hate me,
Adhara said quietly as we headed up the carpeted steps of the stairway. They don't hate you, I said. They're just scared. They're still processing all the dinosaur shit that's going on. They need time. And you've got us.
We're the best people in this place anyway,
Becca said as she flicked her blonde hair over her shoulder.
You're basically sitting at the cool kids' table. There is no table,
the alien said as she glanced around the staircase. It's just a saying, I grinned, as we reached the first floor. My eyes felt heavy as we trudged up the second set of steps. So much had happened that day, and I was ready to crawl into bed with my girls and fall asleep on the luxury sheets. I glanced at Adhara and hoped that she would get a good rest, and it felt a little strange to be going our separate ways after spending the day together. Still, it wouldn't be long until we were back in her spacecraft, and hopefully it would be able to fly us to Korea with the help of the graphite powder. Life was getting so fucking weird.
Tomorrow at sunup?
Adhara asked once we reached the landing.
I will come also to find the graphite powder.
Really? I asked. You don't need to. We can handle it.
I will come also,
Adhara repeated.
I can help with the killing of the Omati. We can go and get all weapons from the ship before leaving.
Sounds good, I grinned as Hei-Wan opened our door. But then a thought occurred to me. Hey, I think you should have your own key, Adhara. Feels weird locking you up at night. Hei-Wan looked at me with bright eyes like she agreed, and she pulled the key out of her pocket. Then I grabbed it before I strode over to the alien, and I offered her the key to her own room. I trust you, I said, as I looked into her emerald eyes, and she cautiously reached out to take the key.
Thank you,
Adhara said.
I have trust for you also.
Well, isn't this all just peachy?
Becca yawned.
See you tomorrow, Adhara.
Then the girls all wished the alien a good night, and they sleepily shuffled into our deluxe suite. Adhara smiled at me a little before she quietly strolled to her own door and opened it, and her emerald eyes seemed to light up the whole hallway. I wanted to say something else to her, or even invite her to stay with us so she wouldn't be lonely, but I settled for a friendly wave and a smile at the beautiful alien. Good night, I said, and she disappeared into her room. I followed my three girls into my own room, and they had already stripped down and climbed into the enormous bed. All three beauties had doe-ish eyes tonight, and soft smiles on their faces, and they all watched me as I set my guns aside, pulled off my clothes, and strolled over to join them.